Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. If I say Massport, chances are this comes to mind. But the public agency is so much more than just Logan Airport. It's a self-sustaining government agency that generates more than $600 million a year across three marine terminals, the Boston Waterfront, Logan Airport, Hanscom Field, and Worcester's Airport. And since 2012, Thomas Glynn has been at the helm. Now, after 6 years on the job, Glynn is stepping down as CEO of the Massachusetts Port Authority. But before he retires from that post, he joins us now in the studio. Thomas Glynn, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for inviting me.
I want to start with your time at Massport and your more recent job. In your 6 years at the agency, the region has experienced a lot of growth in air traffic, many more international flights coming in to Logan Airport, and also a lot of growth in shipping. So what would you consider to be the biggest accomplishment of Massport on your watch?
So I guess I would say three things. The growth of international flights, we've added 20 new destinations since I took over, and we've increased passengers by about 60, international passengers by about 60%. Second is the revitalization of the working port. About 7,000 blue-collar jobs exist in the working port, and I think we've gotten that back on track. And third, the growth of the Worcester Airport, which has always been an important potential way to take some traffic away from Logan and is now experiencing some pretty significant successes with major airlines, JetBlue, American, and Delta.
Couldn't we, though, just attribute that growth in air traffic to the humming economic engine that is New England right now? What has Massport done to deserve credit for all that that expansion?
No, that's a great question. So, I think there's no question that the economy drives our success and is the major factor. I guess I'd like to think that with the various businesses, because we're kind of a public-private enterprise, the airlines are happy with the way we work with them, so they're willing to, try to expand at Logan. The container shipping companies are happy with the way we work with them. So I think good management does play a role in the willingness of our private businesses to take advantage of the opportunities we offer. But the strong economy is definitely the key.
So we got a lot of travelers moving through Logan. They're not always happy, though, Tom. You know this. We've seen some J.D. Power studies on airport satisfaction. The most recent one from September ranked Logan near the bottom among the mega airports. J.D. Power said that Logan's a place where, quote, passenger disruption and increased traffic will be incredibly hard to avoid. What's your response to that?
So I think two things. First of all, if you look at the list, which we've done, pretty much every year, it turns out that airports in the south and the west do a lot better than airports in the northeast. So even though they're not evaluating snow and storms, it has an impact on people's total experience in coming to the airport. And second, we've made a lot of improvements to the airport. Terminal C is totally redesigned. We've added gates, an upgrade of the gates in Terminal E. We're doing a big project, which we're about to unveil, opens tomorrow in Terminal B. So people like the long-term benefit of those construction projects, but they feel disoriented by the construction while it's happening. And J.D. Power has explained that to us. So, I think, down the road when all these projects are completed, we'll see the benefit. But in the short run, when construction is underway, it's a little bit disorienting to folks.
So we got the construction. We got the weather to contend with, which you mentioned. What about Amazon, Tom? What if Amazon picks Boston for its second headquarters? And we expect a decision in the next couple of months, by the way.
Yep.
So is Logan and Massport more broadly prepared to handle the addition of what would be a 50,000-person workforce?
So we worked closely with the state officials and the mayor, the governor on the GE exercise to kind of figure out. And I think we were seen as one of the positives in their decision making. We'd hope that Amazon, if they were to decide to come here, would see Logan as a positive. But I think you're raising an important question, how to absorb 50,000 people, even if it's over a 10-year period, because we've had a lot of population growth in Boston over the last 10 years. So we're getting to a point, where we really have to be very strategic and savvy about how to accommodate new growth.
So let's talk about Worcester. You mentioned them off the top.
Yep.
And now it's daily flights from JetBlue, American Airlines. Next year, Delta is coming aboard. So what impact will those flights have on the economy of Worcester?
So people in Worcester, I think, are very, very happy that we've had the success that we've had, and they feel like it's part of their success story. So if you go back, say, 15 or 20 years, about 400,000 people a year were using the Worcester Airport. So that's kind of a benchmark that we're shooting for. People don't always realize Worcester is the second biggest city in New England. So it's bigger than Providence, bigger than Manchester, bigger than Hartford. They all have airports. So we're very, you know, confident that the Worcester Airport will take off. And the airlines that you mentioned have, you know, looked at it as a business proposition, and they've gotten on board. So I think the growth in Central Mass and the growth in Worcester is, you know, is part of a big Massachusetts success story.
Do you think, though, that's a solution to budget woes? Because the Worcester Airport's been operating in the red. So what's the outlook there?
Well, the more flights they have, then the easier it is to cover the, you know, the operating nut and the capital nut. So, yeah, we think that there are more flights in the works and that ultimately it will be in a break even and then throw off a margin. But you have to make the investment, which we've made over the last 6 or 7 years.
I want to talk about a different money issue, the Massachusetts State Police overtime pay scandal. Troop F, as you know, of course, patrols Massport.
Yep.
The Boston Globe reported back in March that compensation for Troop F hadn't been reported to the state comptroller since 2010. And then when the figures were turned over, we found out that many of those troopers were drawing hefty paychecks, including one who made more than $300,000 for 3 years in a row. So I'm wondering what responsibility you believe Massport bears for that exorbitant overtime and then the lack of disclosure that went with it.
So, you know, I think that to take a step back, put this in context, in order to fully protect the airport, we need about 150 troopers assigned to Troop F. So back in the spring, we were looking at around 120. So when you don't have enough full-time staff, the only solution is to use overtime. And all of our posts are mandatory. We don't have a lot of discretionary posts. You know, the TSA checkpoints have to have somebody assigned to them. So that drove the numbers up because we didn't have enough full-time folks. You know, I think that, you know, the governor, you know, jumped on top of this and the state police have jumped on top of this and they've tried to straighten out, you know, a number of the things that you identified. But obviously it's been you know, it's been a kind of a black eye that we're hoping to get beyond.
But was it up to the state police, though, to do that reporting or should Massport have been doing it?
Well, they are state police employees. So ultimately, you know, I think that's, you know, an important part of the balancing act.
Although Massport at the time was paying the troopers directly, right? That's changed since the spring, right?
We changed that because a system had been designed in the 70s. And it hadn't really been reviewed. So when we looked at it, we said, well, that doesn't really make sense. It just, you know, leads to the opportunity for confusion.
So how about development? You know, we think about transportation, of course,
yep.
With your agency, but you've played a big role in development, particularly in the seaport, too. And I'm thinking about the Omni Hotel project, which began construction earlier this year. And Massport notably used diversity as one part of the scoring process when picking the winning bidder for that project. Is that something Massport is going to continue to do? And what were those diversity factors?
So we tried a different approach. The chairman of our real estate committee on the board, Dwayne Jackson, kind of initiated some creative thinking about this. So basically, we said to the six people who bid, there's 100 points. You get 25 points for finance, 25 points for design, 25 points for execution, and 25 points for diversity. So we let them decide how they wanted to do that. And they were kind of competing against each other, which is kind of different than the traditional approach. So we ended up with a big success with Omni, with a great diversity component that they generated. And we said, well, that was successful, so we're going to do it again. So we just put out last summer an RFP for another parcel, parcel A2, for an office building. We use the same criteria, 100 points, 25 points for diversity. We got 12 bids. We narrowed it down to 7, then 4, then 2. So it seems to work in the Seaport District. And, you know, we're very happy because it isn't just employees in the construction trades. It's the investors. It's the architects. It's the managers. So we're really trying to, you know, make sure the table is big enough to reflect the diversity of the Boston economy and not just have the same folks over and over again, you know, win these bids.
I do want to ask you a bit about your old job.
Sure.
You previously headed the MBTA during the Dukakis administration.
I did.
And as you know, after the high-profile failures of that system during Snowmageddon a few years ago, we all remember this, the public scrutiny turned to decades of underinvestment and maintenance. And so I'm wondering now whether you think the investments made since 2015 and Governor Baker's Make It Work mantra is what the MBTA needs.
Well, you know, I think they're on the road in a very dramatic way. You know, any of these big 100-year-old systems, you know, when I worked at the MBTA in the early 90s, there was a blacksmith because some parts had to be manufactured because they were no longer available. So I think you just have to recognize a 100-year-old system. I think all the changes that have been made, you know, have been beneficial. You know, some changes were made in the financing in the 90s that, you know, maybe if we had to do over again, we'd say, well, maybe that wasn't the best way to restructure the financing. But nonetheless, that happened. So no, I think they're on the road to recovery. But, you know, a million people depend on it every day. And, you know, they get frustrated, as they should, for any kind of an interruption and if they're late to work. So it's a big public responsibility. And, you know, people are kind of looking over their shoulders, as they should. But I think everything that I've seen is very positive. And you know, I think people will be happy in the long run. But, you know, they're living in the short run. So you have a lot of frustration.
Thomas Glynn is the CEO of Massport. He's stepping down from that post next month. Tom, thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.